Okay, well, great scenes from across the Tasman there. This session of Marxism 2011 is special guest Joe Carolan from Unite in New Zealand. He'll be talking to us today about militant unionism in the 21st century. We're very lucky to have Joe here to speak today, and we'll be expressing our gratitude for coming across to speak to us, Joe. I think that's all I'll say for now, and there'll be more stuff to say at the end of the session. And I think, given the buzz that come off the video, I think we should just hand straight over to Joe. Thank you very much, Joe.
Okay, thanks, Matt. So I should just introduce why an Irishman ends up in New Zealand and New Zealand to talk to an Australian. Yeah. So I joined the socialist movement in the early 90s and was very involved in the anti-capitalist movement, I suppose, later on in that decade, beginning this one. And, you know, we were protesting outside things. We were protesting outside Starbucks, you know, outside McDonald's, outside these multinational corporations, and going on about all the evil things that they do, you know, the rape of the environment, you know, the bad food they serve, all that. But the last group of people, you know, that we seem to ever try and connect with was actually the poor workers within these groups, you know, who are being exploited. And you always explain to those workers, we're not protesting against you, we're protesting against this evil, you know, multinational corporation you work for. And most of them were like, yeah, fuck yeah, we know all about that, man. And I remember one May Day protest, it was 2001 in Auckland, and, you know, a contingent of the anti-capitalist bloc, or whatever we call ourselves, you know, ran off and broke the windows of McDonald's, went in and occupied it. And we had all the slogans about, the rape of the rainforests and the bad food and all the rest. But then there was this slogan, well, unionize the workers as well, right? And I remember that sticking in my head and going, yeah, well, but we should, right? We should. So years went by, I went back, went to the Battle of Genoa and all that, and then me and my partner decided to move back to Aotearoa, to New Zealand. And it was at that time, reading indie media, that I found out that there was a small union called Unite, and they just recruited a few thousand fast food workers, and they were looking for people to help. And I wrote instantly, and I went, you're doing the work of Larkin, you're doing the work of Connolly, you're organizing the unorganized workers, what do you want me to do? We want you to come down to Auckland and do an interview and talk to us, right? So I couldn't believe it that they would, they could obviously Google me and find out that I'm a known Trotskyist and troublemaker. And these are the kind of people that you want to exclude from unions in Ireland, you know. They won't let you anywhere near. And these guys offered me a job as an organizer. Oh, so I couldn't believe it. And also on the payroll was Simon Oosterman, a well-known anarchist, anarcho-syndicalist, troublemaker, who gets arrested every second week. And, a whole great bunch of different kinds of people, but all very, very, very committed to workers. So I just might give you a bit of the origins of Unite Union, you know, before we came to it. In New Zealand, in the 1980s, there was a huge attack on workers' rights that ambushed people, caught them completely by surprise, and it was led by the Labour Party. So the New Zealand Labour Party did the job that Thatcher and Reagan did in other countries in destroying that country through neoliberal attacks. And indeed, some of the Labour Party people who led that assault broke off and formed the far-right party in New Zealand, the ACT Party, Association of Consumers and Taxpayers, you know, who are privatise everything, you know, ramp up the police, privatise the prisons, blah, 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 blah. And this caught many people off guard. You know, for a while, the working class was actually stunned in New Zealand. And that was followed in 1991 by the Employment Contracts Act, which took away unions' rights to collectively bargain, you know, the collective contracts, and union membership just collapsed in New Zealand. So as bad as things are here, we've been learning about some of the challenges that you face. If you don't face those challenges, look across the Tasman to see what kind of society you can expect. At one stage, wages in New Zealand were higher than they are here. Our wages or 30 to 40% lower. So if you see the Kiwis kind of looking at the menu upstairs, kind of going, just realize that although the prices are the same, the exchange rate, you guys earn better wages than us, right? So 10 bucks to you is like 20 bucks to us when we're looking at the, yeah, okay. So there's been a huge fall in living standards in New Zealand and destruction of unions in many, many places. And the big unions just retreated, you know, retreated to either large sites or, you know, the public sector. So for many, many workers, they're just abandoned to the whims of the free market. But there was resistance in New Zealand. I mean, there were, people did want to have a general strike in 1991 against the employment contract. There was huge marches. Everybody you talked to in New Zealand about a union went, yeah, my mum and dad took me to the march, you know. Comrades of Ours tried to get up on stage to call for the general strike. They were battered by the SEP, which were the Stalinist union enforcers at the time. Gone now. But, you know, all that potential to fight, you know, wasn't given an outlet in the trade unions, but did find political reflection in a break from Labour with the formation of the New Labour Party and later the Alliance, which was kind of a left social democratic party, kind of old Labour values, but a new Labour name, right? So this party, you know, grew, and, you know, talked about union rights, it talked about stopping privatization, you know, nationalization, reversing the attacks, and actually at one stage polled higher than the New Zealand Labour Party. But in the end, because its trajectory was based on parliamentarianism and winning more and more elections, went into coalition with the New Zealand Labour Party in just when I arrived, 1999, yeah. And in its short time in government, it did pass a couple of laws that tilted the balance back again for unions, right? So this is important to remember. For example, we've got a couple of laws yous don't have. We're allowed to access workplaces as union organizers. We can go into any workplace, go, we're from the union, we want to see all the workers here, send them out one by one, thank you, I'm sitting over here. And the boss would go, oh, shit, it's the union, right? So that was quite an important thing. And also the right to collectively bargain was brought in again. So that those things were brought in by the Alliance guys. But pretty soon, they found out the dangers of going into coalition with Labour. Not only attacks on the working class start to happen, and they get the flak for it, but also the war in Afghanistan. To their credit, the leaders of the Alliance Party go, not in our name, you know. Matt McCartan, the founder of the Unite Union, was kind of summoned in by Helen Clark and Jim Enderton and go, look, it's not really your thing. You know, why do you care about Afghanistan? It's nothing to do with New Zealand. You know, what does it matter to you? And he goes, well, I know that I can sleep at night, that not one bomb has dropped on a family in Afghanistan, and I didn't kill them. So I thought it was actually quite a principled, you know, thing. The elections come, they're destroyed, and the Alliance is now a footnote in history. But that meant that some of the left wing who were involved in that organization had to rethink what they were doing, right? The concentration on electoralism, the parliament, etc. And what they'd always found is that even though they got a left-wing vote in New Zealand, they never got it from the working class, you know, from the hard working class, from the blue-collar working class, from the Maori working class. There was no connection there. And so the project of the left was not to form another electoral party with better policies, you know, more blah, 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 but was to somehow try and re-engage with the people that we claim that we want to lead, who are the workers, right? And what was the best way to do that? So that was the kind of foundation of the Unite project, led by Matt McCartan, and also a Trotskyist called Mike Train, who also does a lot of the global peace and justice, anti-war movement in Auckland. We've been joined by other people like John Minto, for example. I don't know if people know Minto. who would be the leader of the kind of Springbok movement against apartheid, and you know, the closest New Zealand has come to civil war since the land wars. So it's got a good collection of left-wingers in the union, and the mission statement is to try and re-engage workers, but where they're at as well, with the problems that they face. And one of the major problems that we face in New Zealand is massively low pay. So I was involved in a campaign at the beginning of 2006 with those fast food workers. It was called Supersize My Pay. And it was kind of, you know, still the anti-capitalist thing, you know, with the Morgan, what's his name?
Spurlock.
Yeah, Spurlock, who, you know, the badness of the food and stuff, and the Boot was selling, Fast Food Nation was selling as well. So the multinational companies just went, oh, fuck. Oh, no, they're coming for our workers as well. And it was great. It was electric, right? Just for example, the first strike we had was at Starbucks, and it was filmed by TV3. And young Nick, you know, he's a bit of an indie kid and, you know, had the haircut and stuff. But he's still a worker as well, right? Students are workers, and workers are students, if you want the poster here. And, you know, young Nick comes out with the TV cameras. He rips off his green apron and throws it to the ground. And he goes, this is for the Starbucks workers of the world. Pours his lighter fuel on it and burns the motherfucker. So this is the first image of, if you like, the Supersize My Pay campaign. And people go, wow, I want a bit of this. You know what I mean? And within a week or two, we had a little union bus. And we were running around doing wildcat strikes, where basically we get one strike in one store, throw them on the bus, drive to the next store, and rather than the officials going, you know, blah, 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 send them all in going, we're on strike! Come on! Get on the bus! Okay, okay! Whack! And so at one stage, like, we had 15 Starbucks or stuff on strike at the same time, and some of the leaders of that are actually in my political organization still, you know, it's an experience that, you know, give them energy for the next 20 years. So that was great. And the Starbucks workers led the rising. But like, they were kind of students, you know, and they were kind of hip to the anti-capitalist stuff working in Starbucks with pickets about Palestine or globalization happening regularly, you know, with some of the same people who are organizing them. And so, you know, there was that kind of thing. But as we moved into sectors like, say, KFC and McDonald's, we noticed the working class starting to brand a lot more. And so our union organizes a lot of migrant workers, PI workers, Maori workers, Indian workers, and Chinese workers. So you see our next poster over here. We produce union literature, you know, in Hindi, in Chinese, and we've got a Chinese officer, Lei Jin. Auckland's a big Asian town there. And we've successfully unionized Asian workers, right? So there was a whole load of myths about the modern working class that we've busted one by one. The first myth was that you can't organize the unorganizable, right? The sectors that we're trying to organize have a huge turnover. If we stop for 6 months, all our members will be gone. So it is a kind of labor of Damocles, but that means that we're visiting the sites all the time, right? People see the union all the time. And that's very good. I mean, that's a different kind of culture from other things. But so we have succeeded in organizing in high turnover industries. But we also organize people. And the myth was, oh, the Chinese workers, they won't join you because, you know, the different culture and, you know, it's what's in it for me kind of thing. And, you know, we've broken that too. And so those are kind of early origins of the union, and the kind of Supersized My Pay thing was the big kind of entry to it. And we won. We won significant battles. We helped push the minimum wage rate from $9 up to $12. That was our target. Now, I know that doesn't sound much in Australia, but for us, I mean, that was a big, big victory. We also destroyed youth rates. Right, we had, our slogan was equal pay for equal work. And we were saying this to Helen Clark, the feminist, you know what I mean? And the Labour Party, you know, whose leadership, you know, was had been involved in those struggles for women in the 70s, right? We go, well, the work that a young 16-year-old worker in KFC does. For example, we had the situation where Chef Super, who'd been working for the thing since the age of 14, right? She was getting paid $3.50 an hour less than someone who'd started the week, there, over 18 worker. And that was a great struggle. And not only did it involve the workers, I mean, I was at a strike committee in KFC Balmoral, which is 16 and 17 year olds, you know, all in a circle around the table, the 15 or 20 of them, plotting the strike, you know, and John McMeekin was the evil area boss. And they'd like made a Photoshop of, you know, Jabba the Hutt with McMeekin's face on it. And it was brilliant seeing these young Pacifica and Chinese and Kiwi, you know, Pakehart workers just plotting strikes together. And they had their wildcats too. But this was very much a different sector of the working class that it had spread to. And also this spilled then into the schools. So we, school students started bringing in the struggle about trade unions into the schools, set up a group called Radical Youth, and there were school strikes on the same time as the workers went on strike, and we had 1,000 workers pour down the streets of Queen Street with arrests and police and sirens going everywhere. And I remember we let the young workers organize it themselves, marshal it themselves. It was chaos. But it made the front of the New Zealand Herald and all the TV channels that young people were on general strike in Auckland. And I think that's where we kind of came from, the revolutionary left within the union. We are always hoping that this will trigger off, you know, some kind of response in the rest of the working class as well. It was quite hard for us. We're a small union, and the left is relatively small too. But since then, the union has grown into other sectors. I went back to work when I had my baby, so I organized language school workers, right? So, you know, people who'd consider themselves middle class, but who actually have been proletarianized. You know, 3-month contracts, not paid for Christmas, not paid for stat days, rubbish, right? And we've successfully unionized all those workers. And a very polite strike 3 weeks ago called a tea-in, right? And all the teachers were there at 9 o'clock. We planned it. It was great. And, you know, you have to pitch it to different people. But, so the strike's beginning and everybody's making a cup of Earl Grey, you know, another cucumber sandwich, Vicar. And 20 past 9 and everybody's still drinking their tea. And see the first furtive, you know, Korean students kind of going, teacher, are you coming to class? You know, and then it's 9:50 and the boss is... So that was very, very successful. You know, they had strikes in call centers in Solna. And I don't know if I properly explained it, but, you know, and people would see me and John Minto and Mike and people on the marches, for Egypt and those kind of solidarity things. And Vodafone, of course, closed down the internet, you know, succumbed to the pressure of Mubarak. So we were condemning, you know, Vodafone and stuff. And then we went to unionize the Vodafone workers. And they're kind of going, yeah, the dirty bastards closed down the internet. Let's strike! So the Salmat workers went out and strike, and they won as well. So we have proven that even in tough times in New Zealand, if you strike, you can win, you know, and you might spend months and months and months in negotiation, like the teachers' unions, you know, all of that. And you know, our response to that is, right, start the chess clock, tick, 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 you know, 3 days, bam. Right. And, that's got some results as well. However, it's not all plain sailing. You know, it is a struggle. And just as a revolutionary party needs to tack and turn, we've had to tack and turn too, you know. The JB Hi-Fi struggle, for example, a very strong store in Wellington. They went out for, you know, 20, 30 strikes. And we thought we'd done our work in Auckland that it would spread, but, you know, management put the frighteners on people. So that one was a bit like the Paris Commune, you know. One strong city ready to go, and, yeah, it was difficult. Sky City, Recently, we just had a the industrial climate has changed in New Zealand now with the National Party government coming to power. And they've actually started to roll back those small reforms, those small changes that give us the ability to do what we're doing. With the result that we've had an increase in lockouts. Sky City is really the bastion of Unite. It was the first significant group to join. And there we have a very strong leadership of Maori workers and there who actually play a very interesting role in the New Zealand working class. You find that Maori, with their tradition of resistance, carry that tradition like into the workplace as well. And if you go to a warehouse or factory where there's a group of Maori workers, they tend to be the delegates, you know, they tend to be the ones calling for strike. They tend to be the ones with the memory of struggles that have happened before in the 70s and the 80s. You know, my uncle said we better go and strike, you know, it's that kind of way. And so the Maori leadership were very, very strong in Sky City and successfully recruited hundreds of Chinese workers there for the big strike that we had. But there, the targeted lockouts from the employers, they locked out specific people, you know, ringleaders, the troublemakers, and this put huge pressure on us. That meant no smoke and mirrors. That meant we had to go to hard pickets, and we had hard pickets. We stopped the scabs from getting in the doors. No one in, no one out. I was just kind of reminded, the last time I was in Melbourne was about 10.5 years ago, and we were blockading a casino, and I came back here, I've just started blockading a casino in Auckland. That was very hard, but meant our union survived, right? They were trying to smash our union. They're out to get us now, and it's not smoke and mirrors that'll get us through this. And we picketed the front entrance, and we stopped all the customers coming in, you know. Americans who want to gamble at 11 a.m. in Auckland, they exist. Right? No, fuck. This big guy goes, no fucking union stopping me from getting through. Big commotion. And then his wife's behind him going, God, I'm married an asshole. But after that struggle, I mean, we did, there was debate within the union. The union is very democratic. The bureaucrats don't have their way. I mean, people will take a lead from people that they trust. But a very close vote there, 55 to 45%, you know, accepting the deal or continuing the struggle. And many of us thought that there was, you know, another good week, 2 weeks of hard struggle up there. So, you know, you've got to take it. You know, I mean, we have a responsibility as well for people who are several steps to the left of the class to actually respect the workers' right to make their decisions as well. So that's a dialectic I'm always grappling with. Happier news, we've also organized security guards as well. Again, there was a lockout there, and we went up to the major depot for the security guards. There were scabs there as well who were going to try and go to work. And we blocked all the squad cars in the depot, right? For about 3 hours, there was no security cover in all the warehouses in Auckland. And we were getting out our phone and threatening to phone the mongrel mob and Black Power and give them a list of all the things. So that lockout, we fucking not only smashed, but they had to pay us big time. And they got a very, very good pay rise. So we've proven that, you can organize the unorganized, right? Even in, you know, high turnover industries. B, that migrant workers are not only willing, but actually willing to lead struggles in the workplace. Three, young people will be enthusiastic, and students will be enthusiastic student members. Members of the union. And four, we can even move these struggles, you know, into more kind of professional groups like language teachers and things like that. So that's a wee introduction to it. There's plenty of other comrades here, including the Dunedin ISO comrades who've really done fantastic work down there that they'll tell you all about. But I suppose the best thing for me with what we've done with this project is actually the revolutionary left in New Zealand finding each other, right? We've several different groups over there, the ISO down in Dunedin, Socialist Aotearoa in Auckland, Workers' Party kind of in Wellington, and a very good anarchist group in Christchurch called Beyond Resistance. And, you know, if nothing was happening, we'd all be bitching at each other, right? But because we've got this project and it's relating to the class, we all actually discuss things as comrades about, you know, how do we grapple with this situation. And so I think it's a very good project in terms of regrouping the serious revolutionary left that want to relate to workers. Yeah? I'll leave it there for a minute.